when people get poor at putting, whether it's yips or different things or whatever, and really struggle. But I think there is something in your setup or something in your fundamentals that starts you down that road, and then it becomes mental. Okay. I don't think you roll out of the womb with the yips.
No. Struggling with your golf game, you need two things, my friend. You need some swing lube with some yacht water with real Reposado tequila, and you need to follow me over to Dew Sweepers TV. Come on, let's go get better at the game of golf.
All right, joining me here on the Tour Coach, anytime I get to have a glass of wine with my man Jackson K. Golf, Jackson Court, it's good to have you in the hizzy tonight.
Thanks for having me, T-Ball.
Been great having you down there in the golf studio today, and man, you did some really good work with some short game with some of my juniors and stuff as you're in town, and we're going to do some fun stuff for Colby tomorrow. Thanks for coming down.
My pleasure, T.
I want to talk a little about short game. Okay. This evening with you. I think, to me, the lowest hanging fruit of ways to score for people of all skill levels is to improve and sharpen their short game. I kind of want to go through stuff, and, you know, let's start with putting.
Okay.
We'll go with putting to the chipping, and I want to start with what, when you watch, you know, whether it's juniors or amateurs or good recreational golfers, what are things that you see, like, that easily they could do that would improve them with their putting? I'm just curious where you think, you know, recently had Todd Soans on talking a little bit about some of this stuff, especially, you know, especially with chipping and putting. I'm curious where your thoughts are, things that they could do.
Yeah, always set up initially, right? Similar to the full swing stuff, but I think a lot of your setup fundamentals and how you approach even getting into the golf ball, there's a bunch of things downstream that get affected from that.
Right.
Right. So I think if you can start with good setup fundamentals, grip, ball position, posture, alignment, and your routine and how you get in there, I think if you can have those understood and organized well so that they're able to, like, collect their thoughts and walk through a process like that, I think that's always a great place to start, kind of figuring out the cobweb in there and how they influence each other, right? And then educating them on that process as well.
You said a word there, organize.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big word for golfers. And I think that they, I think that golfers go, whether it's when they practice or they play, I don't think they're very organized in their approach to a short game shot or a putting shot, really, or any shot. But especially putting, I think they sometimes they put the ball down, they step in there, they do it different every time.
Yep.
They don't know why they stand the way they stand or how they stand. If you ask them how far they're trying to be away from the ball, where are they trying to get their eyes, where do they want their hands on the grip, very few of them could answer any of that for you. And yet, when I watch you, I've watched you with players for, golly, a long time now, but especially as you've developed into such a great young teacher that teaches not only and develops great junior players, but competitive college players and tour players, how do you help them organize that? What are things you do to help them organize?
Yeah, that's probably where it gets a little more person-specific, but if we're talking about specifically the juniors that we were with today, yeah, for sure, grip and set up initially, like where they're aiming, obviously the putter head, but also their bodies with that. Like Steph, for example, today, ball was back, feet were open, and then she was kind of shoving it down the line, right? She had this disconnect, like all three of those go together.
Right.
But like, let's start with getting the ball in the right spot, making sure she can kind of see her lines and make sure she knows where what square is, right? Which is why I always use those sticks. I know it's kind of a easy, simple thing to do with just two alignment sticks creating like that T formation that I do all the time. But I think that's a quick way for them to get their aim down with the ball position and then be able to orient their body lines to that. Mm-hmm. And that's always a quick little piece in the beginning, which, like I said earlier, influences the stuff downstream. But yeah, I think in terms of organization with that, initially when you're having people hit several putts from the same location, that's okay, right? Just for consistency so that they get the rhythm and the feel of that back-to-back. But then you got to step outside of that station and be able to have them go through a routine and organize those in a process very similar to the full swing. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think that too. I think when it comes to if you're a golfer and you're trying to improve your putting, I think you have to develop a station or two that you set up and you do, right?
Okay,
I think that trying to become a better putter but not addressing or organizing your setup or organizing what you work on is just wishful thinking, right?
Yeah, so
I was going to say careless whisper, but that was like a wham song, right? So, but... You know, so where, how do you organize that for? Yeah. What, how would you set up just a sample station?
So, specific example with Steph, after I watched her putt some, a bunch of different putts, left to righters, right to lefter, short and kind of mid range. What I like to do is I find a straight putt 6 to 8-ish feet. Then you put an alignment stick on the outside edge of the hole, and then perpendicular to that, you put another stick down just outside the width of the putter. And so when they set their putter down inside that target line stick, basically, that's square so they can see it either with the line on their putter matching up to it or with the perpendicular stick for ball position, right? So some people orient their aim better with the line on the face, which actually there's a really cool tidbit that Emilio was talking about today.
Okay.
We got to talk about this one. or they see it better with the face and that ball position stick. 6 of 1, half dozen, I don't care which one resonates better with the player. But that gets aim and ball position and then getting their body square to it. And what I've – this is taking green reading out of it because I think that's a whole nother concept and a massive influence into this. But I think if I had a little bit more time with Steph, what – you know, into the specific examples, when I use a mirror, I've kind of changed my process in the last probably 18 months now. I've started doing this a whole lot more. Like when you use a mirror, whatever, old school, you probably always hear that your eyes have to be directly over it. I don't think that's the case for everyone.
I think they can be inside it.
Inside
it? I think a lot of them are inside it. Yeah. I don't see many good outside.
No. Okay. Well, in like, you know, nerd, you've got X, Y, and Z axis. So if you can move your eyes in any three of those directions, you're going to influence what you see.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think if you can use a mirror in tandem with the setup stuff, so then when they do get over it and they're in control of those variables and they're able to look down their line and match up what they see with where they're trying to go based on green reading again. But if they can get set up and when they're looking down, it's matching up on that straight putt into the center of the hole, I think that's a massive little cornerstone to being able to take that step, because if they can visually see their intended line, that's a huge key to them being able to see it again and again, and then be able to walk outside of that station and then start to see a line without that stuff. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I remember I've told you this, and it's along similar lines. Way back on the Dew Sweepers radio show, years ago, Marius Filmotter used to come on, okay?
Okay.
Marius was the inventor of the SAM.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
And Marius came
German
on.
Guy? Huh? The German guy?
Mm-hmm. Brilliant guy. Great interview. Loved to drink wine, too. I love drinking wine with him. But I asked him one time about how important his aim, and he said, I care. I'm paraphrasing here. Good Lord, if Marius is listening, if I'm wrong, text me. But he said, I care where they think they're aimed, and can they start it where they think they're aimed?
Where they think they're aimed, and can they start it where they got it?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so I always found that to be interesting, but I also, as a teacher and a coach, I think you extrapolate that back to what you're seeing. Like, do their eyes match where the putter or where they're trying to hit it? Right. And I think if you get your eyes in the right place, does that make sense?
Yeah. Very much. Yeah. Okay.
So I always thought that was an interesting quote. Okay. I always thought that was, Hank, always on the, Hank HJ, my old mentor, he used to always say he would say the same thing watching somebody hit balls. I'd say, you know, do we need to put sticks down or whatever? Because I want to watch and see, you know. He said, I care where they think they're aimed, and can they start it there?
Yeah.
Right? And he wouldn't change a lot if they were able to start it where they thought they aimed all the time.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah. In developing or creating that structure for a recreational player or junior player that's developing, and compared to working with Emilio today and watching him putt, those are very different in my mind. But I think you're prepping those players to get more towards the stage that Emilio's in, right? Where, like a Steph or a Cosimo. What a great name, by the way. Good kid. Been playing 3 months.
Crazy.
Unbelievable.
His good shots are scary good. He obviously hits a bunch of bad ones. Yeah, but man, for 3 months, he works his butt off. It's fun to watch him. Yeah.
So you have the structure in the beginning to have that stuff be consistent day in and day out. Emilio's doing that, right? And then I think they need more repetition in that, in their practice. And then they obviously need some performance stuff. Where Emilio's got his block stuff, and then he's very heavy on the performance stuff and does not do much more of his station stuff. But I think that's way better for him. And it's about getting those players to move closer to that range quicker.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think the plan needs to be. So if they can understand that.
So basically, you're trying to take players from the phase where they need the stations and the block that monitor all of the fundamentals and that are, you know, monitor all those things, to get where they do that enough over some time that they don't need to do as much of that. And then their practice becomes way more
performance
situational,
way more,
and that type of stuff. Right.
Yes. Now they need a heavier dose of their station stuff right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially because, like, you take a tour player, even if they struggle putting by tour standards, the worst putter on tour is better than your average putter at the club, right? Regardless of what anybody says.
Yeah.
But so, you know, they're further along with all of that. Mm-hmm. But I agree. And I think that I always talk about, like, the times I've been around. You spend a bunch of time out at the Bears Club and different golf courses with players, and you watch other tour players, and they all have their one or two things that they always do.
Mm.
And they stick with those. They may not do it as much or whatever.
So I'm just thinking about this now. But so asking you this question. I think when I'm working with a recreational player, it's not as much of like testing one variable at a time, but kind of putting them all together. But then with a tour player, somebody that's really good, I think it's better to isolate one of those variables and then kind of see the the consequence or the results of that action.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say or no?
Yeah, I think every student's different. I think every teacher's different, right? I obviously, you know, you could argue that I err almost too much on the simplicity side. And I don't do near as much putting as you, right? In fact, I refer a huge amount of my putting for my competitive players to you. And I would say that, you know, I probably on all sides tend to isolate, like, what's the one setup thing or the one thing.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because I think that's also matches how I teach full swing, right? But I don't think that there's a wrong or right. I think your results, results speak for themselves, right? I mean, okay. If you're making people putt better and they're scoring better, you're doing a damn good job.
Yeah.
Okay. I love watching the stuff you do with them. Far more advanced in the putting than I am. And yet, like, still, I believe the majority of people that get off, I said this to Steph, we were talking really more about chipping and pitching, but I think that when people get poor at putting, whether it's yips or different things or whatever, and really struggle, I think people always say it's mental, and I do think it can get to a point where it is mental, but I think there is something in your setup or something in your fundamentals that starts you down that road, and then it becomes mental. Okay. I don't think you roll out of the womb with the yips.
No, okay.
So, Scotty in one hand, yips in the other, right?
Driving down here last night, I was chatting with a fellow coach. And I'll keep their names out of it, just whatever, because we were talking about one of his tour players who was struggling with some putting stuff. And his full swing, he plays a draw. So he sets up with his shoulders on his start line, feet are square, right? And putting coach got shoulders more square, eyes matched up to the line. Started putting a little better, not earth-shattering,
but yeah.
But then in his full swing, his aim started to get off, and he started the ball on his target line and then started missing it left just from his putting stuff. So that's where I think when you talk about those variables, I think, you know, if you're developing somebody, like, let's get these things nice and concrete. But then with your elite players, you have to isolate or understand each little variable and then.
And I think it's important as a player, regardless of level, to understand that when taking instruction.
Yes.
I'll tell you a story. You'll enjoy this. So Lee Williams.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously I still teach Lee. He's in the finance business. And if you got money to manage, there's nobody tighter or cheaper than his ass. So I would for sure let him do it. I charged the wrong credit card for his lessons for a year and he never spoke up. Yeah, it was Michael Johnson that I charged Michael's credit card. Michael finally figured it out. But anyways,
No.
But anyways.
Yeah. And Lee never said
it. No, he was getting free instruction. And Lee obviously worked with Hank, my mentor, through college and as a pro. And he was always, strong face, more of a shut face guy. Stronger grip, held the face open, hit a fade, really had a lot of rotation. Wanted to improve his short game. Went to a guy and they got the face getting real open to be able to chip and pitch it better. And he got to where he couldn't drive the ball at all. Right? And that was unfair to the swing coach he was with at the time, but he cycled through that. He figured that out. He was like, in a nutshell, right? But like, you've got to be careful to make sure that when you're working on your short game that you and putting that you don't change something that's going to leak into your full swing and have, you got to understand your strengths.
Your superpower.
You got to get shout out to Adam Shriver. You got to understand what your superpower is. Now, I've had players that were great ball strikers that maybe struggled at putting. And I've always thought I think sometimes their pursuit of trying to become much better at putting weakened their ball striking, right? Kind of got on a tangent.
No, that's good.
That's where, I think Shribes is so right, under helping a player, right? And Adam Shriver is one of the best in the world at that, helping a player understand what their superpower is. I know we have a lot of some similar beliefs with Pivot and how he trains and stuff like that. And
it's interesting you say that, because there's an LPGA Tour player that I work with, and I noticed this early when we were working. She will trick herself into working on the same thing, putting, chipping, even bunkers, irons, driver. Mm-hmm. But it has to be that simple. If you throw a second thing in there.
Yeah. And that's tough. That's tough for a teacher to navigate, right?
Right. But I would love it if you can compartmentalize a little bit.
Yeah, I think
putting and chipping for sure. Bunkers maybe a little different, right? And then I think
chip and pitch really bleeds into your full swing.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to compartmentalize putting and bump, easier to compartmentalize those two it is chipping and pitching. But I think if people especially go pitching the ball and they change what they're doing, to think that that's not going to bleed into your full swing if it's something that's going to make your full swing worse, I think you 100% have to take that into account.
Which is a great segue into working on short game with recreational players.
Okay.
And teaching them how to pitch the golf ball.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Like, I know we do that all the time, but that's a great way to get them to organize their full swing stuff better, too.
So how do you help people organize their short game? Because I think, you know, I think here, if we're helping all golfers, but in particular, recreational golfer.
So that's where chipping, I would say, is different than pitching for recreational players. And again, it starts with your setup stuff. I think you can cheat with your setup stuff to make the motion different. And then you should be able to rinse a little bit from that and move on to the next, you know, pitching, or if you're going into some wedge shots, and have your setup be oriented more towards a full swing, and hopefully that's going to shift your movement pattern to be more like that versus your chipping. Because I do think good chippers have tendency in their motion, in my opinion, that's versatile across the board. Like, you can talk about the East Coast, West Coast battle right now in short game. Like, I think good chippers can do both.
See, I agree. And I said that to Todd Sevens. Like, I know the battle. I think it's asinine. But, I mean, I think great players can do all of
them. Correct. And that's where I think, like, the short shots, if you can understand your setup variables based on the lie that you're presented with, right? Like, we're getting...
It's all lie dependent.
Correct. Like, we're getting into dormant Bermuda grass at Atlantic Beach, and chipping there is different in the winter than it is in the summer, and it's wildly different here at Old Palm when it's on past Palm, right?
That's what's interesting at Old Palm, is you've got the short game area where you've got past Palm, which is, I would say, is easier to chip and pitch off, especially to spin it, whereas you go to the first practice hole, and it's Bermuda, and it'll maybe, you know, completely and grainy and completely different.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think your little motions and your chip shots around the greens, I think you can alter your setup to make chipping easier and hopefully not let some of that stuff bleed into your full swing stuff, which, like, talking about Emilio, who's down here, like, you know, I have been privileged to be around him and you working a whole bunch, and I know what his wedges look like when it's good, when it matches up with his full swing, and when it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think it's that complicated, to be honest.
But I think one of the reasons he's had success is, one, he's committed to improve that part of his game with you. He's committed to improve the mental part of his game with Greg, Dr. Carter. And those two facets mirror and feed into what he needs to do in his full swing. And everybody stays in their lane. Right? Like, you hardly ever see me pitch anything in on short game. He's asked me something, I've said what I've thought, and I've texted it to you or shot you a video. Right? And I think that's important. And I think continuity through your game and your thinking, and really what it comes down to, is having a plan to get better.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's where most, if you're a 15 handicapper and you're trying to get to be an 8, you could do a lot of this without changing a lot of your golf swing, but by really addressing your short game and organizing your putting so you know your setup, you have drills to improve your start line and your speed, your short game, you have ways to practice and organize the fundamentals in your short game and to deliver the club to the right low point. If you did that, you'd go from a 15 to a 10 just doing that. Okay. Easy.
Yeah.
100%.
Bunkers.
Let's say you did a great job today with Steph in the bunker. I've watched your bunker stuff. And also, Emilio is one of the best bunker players I've seen. Crazy good.
It's very good.
Yep. Hi-ya!
Yeah, those Spanish hands are good. Yeah, Steph was... Okay, another example. Like, she's got a square to strongish club face, and for a teenage girl, like, she's got a little bit of forward shaft length, and she was doing
that. It's great in your full swing.
Yeah, right. She was doing some of that in the bunker, paired up with a different setup where feet were open, right? And her head was kind of back, and she shoved the handle a little bit forward at a dress. Like, not a great recipe.
For a bunker.
Yeah, right. So
she hit some shanks, very much.
Yeah, those Strix sounds weren't good out of the bunker, but they were good on the greens. Actually,
by the way, everybody here should try the Strixon Diamond now. That diamond is a hell of a ball.
Won me a jingle bell.
Yes, it did win you a jingle bell.
Yes. Ed doesn't play them because they go too far.
No way. So if you want to hit a ball that goes too far, play the Strixon Diamond. Ed, what are we going to do?
But the way I...
He's still at a Baccarat table somewhere.
Best way for Steph to get out of that pattern was to flip her thinking and actually teach her to hit bunkers with a closed setup, mm-hmm. with her feet, right? Where she felt very shut and a little bit of adjustment with the club at address where make sure the face was open, shaft was neutral. She wasn't like shoving the hand forward with her head.
I think that's one thing I see folks in the bunker. We're talking recreational golfers. I see in general a lot of times the ball not enough forward, and I see them shove the handle through, or they set up with the shaft leaning forward,
the ball too far
back. I don't know if I said it correctly. Ball too far back. I see ball back, hands forward a lot. You know,
upper body back.
Yeah, I see a lot of folks. Like, I taught a guy this morning who was really struggling in the bunker. And you could argue he's got the yips. And we had to boil it down to understanding that the ball gets out of the bunker by hitting the sand. And we started with slow, small swings where he just hit the sand to get the feeling to hit the sand. And kind of what you did with Steph, where it was like, even if this ball goes from me to the Camry,
yeah, great,
right? But I'm going to hit the sand. That's a bunker shot, right? And then we're going to carry it a little further, so we're going to just make a little bigger turn. We're not going to add a bunch of crazy speed with his hands, yeah, right? So that's kind of how I address that. It was interesting, though, because I think, you know, really just boiling it down to the simplest part is that he's got to learn to hit the sand. If I can't do it here, I mean.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about some more recreational golfers. It's why they need some Cleveland wedges in their bag.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I don't know if I told you this, and this is kind of cool, but we're going to be doing a school, an afternoon and a morning, two different sessions. Roger Cleveland and I are going to do a short game school where he fits you for wedges.
Come on.
Yeah, at Old Palm.
Incredible.
Well, it's going to be pretty cool. I obviously have had Roger on the podcast, and he's phenomenal. And it's just one of those people that I grew up idolizing and also been with their company for 23 years.
Yeah.
And, like, he's a genius when it comes to wedges. And
yeah, I will say, too, I was giving a shameless plug to Cleveland, but having a good wedge out of the bunker is a big deal for recreational golfers.
I think, too, and I'm not, this is not a plug, it is, but recreational golfers don't always need to play the same wedges that a PGA Tour player, Scottie Scheffler, or Brooks Koepka play.
Yeah, that's
right. And, like,
that's why the Cleveland wedges are great with the CBX line.
CBX. I like that CBX for a recreational golfer a lot because I've helped, obviously, I teach tour players and develop good players, but I still spend a lot of time on the tee. Like this morning, you saw some of it. Still, I still love helping regular golfers play better, yeah. Right? And I've put a lot of folks that are recreational golfers at CBX. It's way more to me out of the bunker. It's got a pretty wide, flange and. It's got some weight to it, and it's more forgiving.
Yeah, I mean.
And I also think around the greens and, like, you know, 20, 30-yard shots, because it has some forgiveness and perimeter weighting, I just think the miss hits go closer to the same distance, which I think especially inside 40, 50 yards is a huge-ass deal.
Yeah. Elite players, too, like another professional golfer, female, changed iron shafts, so changed in her wedges, and her bunker game went to pot. And she went back to old wedges, and they were 15 grams heavier in her wedge shafts, and that was literally the difference.
Being fit correctly for your wedges is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think folks in general think they're not good enough to go get wedges fit. I hear a lot like, "Oh, well, I'm a 15 handicapper. Actually, it's more important because you're going to use them more, right? Like around the greens. I mean, you're going to use it seven more times around the green."
So here's the best advice out of the bunkers, I think, from a coaching perspective I've gotten. Shout out to Mr. Mark Wood. This will have been back at the Lakewood days.
Oh, wow. We go way back.
I'm pretty sure it was there. Might have been Panama City. But he said teaching bunkers is like farm league in baseball. You've got single A, double A, triple A in the big leagues. If you're in single A, you're just trying to get it out of the bunker. If you're in double A, you're trying to get it on the green. Triple A, you're trying to get it close, in the right area close, right? Big leagues, you're worried about.
That's good.
Yeah. And the cool part was each step up the ladder is vastly different in your approach.
All right. So take us through that approach.
So, yeah.
This would be a great wrap-up for this.
Bob. Yeah. So now I do a bunch of bunker, right, work at the club. And I would say
Atlantic Beach, great club, director of instruction.
Yeah. I would say single A, it's like, can you drop a ball behind the bunker in the rough and hit a pitch shot over the bunker onto the green, or like land it on the chipping green and then do that same thing in the bunker? Like, can you get set up with everything being the same, square, normal grip, normal setup, and then can you get like maybe a tick wider so all of a sudden your low point's going to move back and down, and can you make a motion and finish on your front foot? Like, if you can learn how to do that, you're going to get it out of the sand. And then I think double A, then you've probably got to start to understand, like, size of swing, speed, and, like, a little bit more low point control. Right? So then you can start to control some distance. I think when you start going triple A, that's when you better know how to assess lies and start to adjust your setup so that you can start to hit it closer. And then I think when you get to the big leagues, it's obviously that triple A, but then that's when your setup stuff will change even more, and that's when your motion can start to change. Like, thinking of a male professional that I work with who's crazy good out of the bunkers. Like, that's his routine. Like, he hits some shots with that line that I drew with Steph today. Like, that's his warm-up. And then when he scatters golf balls, every shot is different, which, to be honest, is what I kind of observed from you and Bill Haas. Like, Bill was phenomenal out of the bunker, and he couldn't tell you what he was doing, but every setup was different, and motions were different, right? And this kid's probably that, but, like, even further, where, like, one's out and, like, cutty, and the next one's dry and flippy, and one's holdy, and, like,
crazy different. And that goes back to what we were talking about with the bunker wars or the chipping wars. The best players know, to me, the great players know how to adapt the motion to hit the shot they need to hit. Most of you are not to that point yet, so you've got to go from single A to the major leagues.
Yeah.
Good stuff there. Jax, that was good. Great day today.
That was awesome.
We're going to have a fun day with Colby tomorrow. Look, if you're out there and you want more short game help, full swing help, obviously he's a great follow on Instagram at Jackson K Golf. We're going to make him put a little more content out too. We got some stuff coming out. So give him a follow at Jackson K Golf and reach out to him there if you're in the area or you want some help. And as always, thanks for coming on and appreciate this. And
cheers.
You're the best, buddy.